It's time for Silver and Black Today, Game Day. We're breaking down the Raiders' upcoming game and bring you in-depth analysis from national football insiders. Let's get the nation fired up. Here are your hosts, Scott Gulbranson and Mo Moten.
It is Sunday. It is a big Sunday. Later tonight, Allegiant Stadium. National eyes turn to the Raiders as they host the Kansas City Chiefs at Allegiant Stadium off the Las Vegas Strip, a massively huge AFC West matchup. Good morning, everyone. Scott Gulbranson, Mo Moten with you. Silver and Black Today, Game Day, only on The Fan here in Las Vegas. Thanks for being with us. Whether you're on the East Coast, the West Coast, somewhere in between, or international, we appreciate you being with us to talk about Raider football. Well, another tough week in Raider Nation. That is, Damon Arnette is gone. That's right. The 2020 draft class continues to get worse. Could it be any worse? I don't think so. As the Raiders, after the Ruggs tragedy this last week, then have to deal with cutting their former first-round draft pick in Damon Arnette. And Mo, it's hard to sugarcoat it. You know, we want to talk about football on this show. We want to talk about Raiders. We want to talk positively when we can. But the reality is 2021, you thought 2020 and COVID was a year you want to forget. The Raiders still stand pretty well in the standings at 5-3, but man, it has been a mess all around this club.
Yeah, I said this on Twitter. If I told you all the things that happened during the Raiders season up until this point and told you they would be 5-3, would you believe me?
No way.
And the answer is, like he says, probably no, but they're still 5-3 and they have a big game tonight against the Chiefs, and they can go 6-3 and still have a good shot at making the playoffs. But we talk about the 2020 draft class. Basically, you have Bryan Edwards left, who's inconsistent, shows flashes, but not there yet. I believe he didn't have a catch, I don't believe, in the last game against the Giants. You got John Simpson, who's an okay starter, still developing. I would say borderline starter. I wouldn't say you pencil him in next year as your guard if you can find an upgrade. Amik Robinson is basically a backup at this point. A lot of people know how I feel about Amik. I think he could still be a good football player, but he's just not close to being there yet. He's pretty much a backup. So you're looking at Bryan Edwards and John Simpson as being your two impact players from the 2020 draft class, your third rounder and a fourth rounder. And I'm looking at the class right now and just seeing that the top three picks are no longer on the team is just devastating.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, the Henry Ruggs thing, who would have been able to even guess what happened with him and the terrible, yeah, terrible tragedy and his just horrible decision that now he has to live with the rest of his life, and the family of Tina Tintor has to live with the rest of their lives as well without their relative. But the Ruggs thing, then you have Damon Arnette we talked about. Lynn Bowden Jr. never played a down for the Raiders. Bryan Edwards, not consistent. And of course, as I joked about on our Friday show down in Southern California, Mo, Tanner Muse, the greatest Raider to ever play the game. I know, once a Raider, always a Raider. go on. John Simpson, Amik Robertson, as you mentioned. I mean, Mo, that coupled with 2019, yes, you have Josh Jacobs. I like Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs can't stay on the field. Then you have Jonathan Abram, who was trouble last year, is doing much better in his role this year. So I'm glad to say that there's a positive there. But I don't know that both those guys see their second contract with the Raiders. Maybe they do. Maybe I'm wrong. But I don't see it right now. Then you go to 2018. Reggie McKenzie's still there. Colton Miller is the guy that sticks out to me the most, has done well. And to your point, I think you made on Friday, yes, there's a couple guys. But Mo, you cannot miss that much. You can miss occasionally, and maybe even one guy a draft, as long as it's not your first pick all the time. But this kind of track record for the Raiders over the last three drafts is brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal when you look at the 2020 class. And I would say the 2019 class is okay. Yes. You know what the problem with the 2019 class is? If Cleveland Farrell was an impact player, you would say
Cleveland Farrell.
Pretty damn good class. Then you would say, oh, no problem. We can deal with, you know, Mullen being hurt, Josh Jacobs not being completely healthy all the time, or Jonathan Abram having holes in his game but improving. We can deal with that. But because the Raiders missed on that pick, the number fourth pick in the draft, and people will say, well, just imagine Max Crosby was the number four pick and Cleveland Farrell was the fourth rounder. Well, Cleveland Farrell can't even get on the field, so he's not even worth that right now.
Yeah.
But because they missed on that top pick, you're just kind of looking at that 2019 class like it could have been so much better if they had hit there. And I just wanted just a quick tidbit. I remember when after the draft, when 2019, when the Raiders made that pick, Vic Tafer came out and said that the Raiders did not like what they saw in Josh Allen's character. Because a lot of people saying, why didn't they get Josh Allen? I remember Vic Tafer saying or writing that the Raiders felt like he didn't have enough dog in him as far as Gruden and Gunther were concerned. So that's why they went with a foundational player with high character, foundational player in Farrell, who's a fit for Gunther. But as you can see, not much production. So when it comes down to it, I don't think Raider fans want to hear the word character anymore. They want players who can contribute right away and play football and help this team win playoff games. And now, of course, there are some character issues you have to weigh with Damon Arnett. But, you know, you want football players who can contribute and help this rebuild move forward. And the Raiders just are not getting enough from their young players, but they are getting a lot from their free agents.
No, they are getting a lot from. And that's the thing. I'm not saying, look, we're talking about the massive miss that was 2020 here. That's not to say that the Raiders don't have positives. We're not here to just crap on top of this team, although they certainly deserve some of that because of what's happened with not only their draft capital, but what's happened with some of the free agent acquisitions they made in previous year. That is not the case this year. We've seen Denzel Perryman. We've seen all sorts of players come in here and do great things and for this team to get them to 5-3. So it's not that you should feel discouraged about this Raider team overall. It just, to me, makes it hard for me to look at a guy that I really like. I really like Mike Mayock. And I know John Gruden was the prime decision maker when he was with the Raiders and with many of these decisions. But Mo, Damon Arnett was a Mayock guy. And he's the guy left in the building that's going to have to answer for whether or not this team makes the playoffs. And then looking at the totality of the draft picks, he's the guy left holding the bag no matter who made it.
Yeah, absolutely. And he owned it. He, in that press conference, he said basically he missed on the 2020 class, kind of owned up to the Damon Arnett. Not kind of, he did own up to the Damon Arnett pick. And again, they felt like they can help Damon Arnett, the player and the person. They knew about his character concerns coming out of Ohio State, but they felt like he would straighten up. And Mayock said he still believes that Damon Arnett could be a solid player in the league, just not now, not with the Raiders. Now, as far as the 2021 class is concerned, I think that's going to be the sticking point with if Mayock stays or not. If we see guys like Trayvon Merrick step up in the second half of the season, make some more impact plays. If Alex Leatherwood continues to improve, they talked about Malcolm Kuntz getting in the action. We'll see if he gets in and makes some plays. Nate Hobbs, as we know, is pretty good at his position in the slot. Probably one of the better slots, rookie slots, or overall slots in the league right now. Even though he had some mistakes, he is a rookie, but he has exceeded expectations. If that 2021 class shows enough promise, I think he gets another year still.
Yeah, and again, we go back to the free agent class this year, the guys that have been added, right? And Casey Hayward Jr., I talked about Perryman. And oh, by the way, do you remember K.J. Wright? Remember K.J. Wright?
Yeah, I remember that guy. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I thought he was going to have a bigger impact. I know he's had some. He was banged up a little bit, but still. But anyway, my point was that Mike Mayock, I really believe, did have a lot to do with that class, right? So yes, John Gruden was the decision maker at the time, but I do think that that team, as far as the scouting department about Mayock and Gruden together, they went out and it was easy, right? Because you had Gus Bradley. You went out and got Gus Bradley guys on defense. But Kenyon Drake is another move we talked about and we talk about every week because we want to remind everybody we told you so. But nonetheless, those guys have made a huge difference. Without those free agents, had they not upgraded, if you had the same type of free agents you had last year, and as far as performance goes, this team would be in a much different position. So I'm not in any way poo-pooing Mike Mayock and some of the great things he's done. I'm just saying that it's for most executives in the league to overcome two straight classes like that, where you have an okay class, a couple guys pop out of another class, and then you have a disastrous class like that. With all that draft capital, will not come back. You don't get that number of picks because you traded Khalil Mack. There was all sorts of moves that they made to get those picks, and that's why there's such value. Now, you have one or two a year that don't work out, that's fine. But if you have a top two, especially around pick that pops, then you're good. I'm just concerned he's going to have. I really think this team's going to have to make the playoffs. Will he get another chance? I don't know, man. It's going to be rough because the NFL is not forgiving when it comes to not being able to execute on draft picks, especially when you've been known as the draft guy throughout your career.
Absolutely. And I think, and I know Raiders fans don't want to hear excuses, and this is not an excuse, but looking at what the Raiders have been through throughout this whole season, now the tragedy, had John Gruden resigning, Damon Arnett getting released, which is on Mayock. But I think some of the hardships outside of his control could save him a bit. And they could say, well, if the Raiders finish 9-8 but don't make the playoffs, but they finish with a winning record and it looks promising toward the end, I think Mark Davis could possibly give Mike Mayock another chance. Because remember, he held on to McKenzie through multiple losing seasons.
Yeah.
People forget this. McKenzie was hanging around and his win percentage was terrible.
Yes.
And Mark Davis kept him around. So I don't think he's going to be quick to boot Mike Mayock if he shows at least that it's heading in the right direction. Now, I know it's going to be hard to say that if they don't make the playoffs for fans, because that's what they're waiting for. But I think Mark Davis is going to look at the big picture and say, where is this headed? Is it headed in the right direction? And if it is, then we'll keep him off for another year.
Well, and the other thing too, and I've not, other than obviously the comments that were inappropriate and whatnot that got John Gruden fired from the Raiders, I haven't talked a lot about this, but you have to look at the culture too, right? We saw last year, remember all those problems with COVID protocol? And I know we're not going to get into the Aaron Rodgers garbage right now, but and I agree that he's being treated differently than the Raiders did last year when they had a bunch of violations. But the Raiders had all those violations. They had guys that were hanging out together, going out when they shouldn't have got out. And I was very critical. I mean, I was on Raider Nation Radio. I was on the team's flagship station at the time. And I was being critical because I didn't think they had an excuse when I heard fans say, oh, what about the Titans last year? No, there was something. I really believe it, Mo. I really believe that John Gruden, the culture that he had there, was not necessarily the best and most positive culture for a young player. I really don't. And so what ended up happening is you saw all the junk last year with that stuff, with protocol breaking and obviously the Lynn Bowden Jr. thing getting traded and rumors of trouble there. And then you see it carry over with these guys into this year and some of the things that had happened. I'm separating the Ruggs thing. That's a whole different issue. But with Arnett, we had heard all the things about him last year. And now, too, by the way, why did all this stuff about the rental cars? So people report that after the guy's cut? That wasn't ever reported before. Why not? And so that's
it seems like that was kept on the hush until he got released.
Yeah, no, it was. And so to me, that's really interesting as well. But nonetheless, I think the culture will change. I think Mike Mayock, I mean, I'm just going off his demeanor and what I've seen him do. I think he will have the opportunity for the rest of the season. Him and Bisaccia, who I know has already done it, they have an opportunity to kind of mold that culture differently and to take it down a notch. It's just like we heard the players say after Gruden left. There was nobody screaming at refs on the field. They could relax. They could do this. And they did play better. So perhaps that's what we're going to see with Mike Mayock. And perhaps that's how he earns his job for next year, is to say, listen, we kind of had some toxicity here. Okay. Now we're going to take that toxicity out and we're going to create it. That means we cut our first round draft pick. And maybe Mayock wanted to do it earlier. Maybe coaches wanted to get rid of him earlier and John Gruden let him. We'll never know for sure. But I do think that these bold moves, the opportunity to kind of press the reset button a little bit and say, hey, look, we made mistakes, but now we're correcting them midterm because we can get this team to the playoffs if we continue to play well and give them the environment they need.
Here's the quick problem with Mayock staying on. And again, I'm a Mayock guy, but here's the problem. If Mayock is there for the 2022 draft and he talks about character again, people are going to raise their eyebrows like, really, Mayock?
Yeah.
Can we really trust your word on this character thing?
Right.
Now, if he goes the other wing and disregards character, they're going to say, well, you had Henry Ruggs. And again, I'm not saying Henry Ruggs was a character issue. He had no stains on his record coming out of Alabama. But they're going to point to Henry Ruggs. They're going to point to Damon Arnett and saying, you should be looking at character and captains because you had some problems with your roster last year. So I think if he stays on, he's in a no-win situation until his draft class produces at a high level.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I, that's why I could never understand. Now, we saw this week, Mo, that OBJ signs with the Rams, right? And, you know, I couldn't believe all that was going on with this Raiders team. That people wanted to sign the drama queen. They wanted to sign him. And then I even heard people say, well, no, back in the day, we used to take the outcasts. No, that's not how it worked. You're glamorizing it in a different way, in a different time, and for different issues. When they took John Matuszak, or they took somebody, oops, sorry. That was crazy, my phone. When they took those guys, let me start over. when they took guys like John Matuszak, or they took players that had had issues in other places, they did, but it wasn't a situation where people were dying. It was a different time, a different era, right, Mo? And to me, people losing or people not understanding that difference is why we saw people talking about OBJ, let's go get him. But that would have been a disaster. And Mike Mayock would have not touched that guy with a 10-foot pole.
No, I mean, look at the drama that happened as he was signing with the Rams. People were wondering, was he signing with the Rams? Is he considering the Packers?
Exactly.
I mean, look at how he exited out. I mean, I'm in New York, so I know his exit from New York wasn't great. And as we saw it play out with Cleveland, his exit in Cleveland wasn't great, with his dad putting a video on Instagram about all the times Baker Mayfield missed him on a pass. Can you imagine if Odell Beckham Jr.'s dad does that to Derek Carr, what Raiders Twitter would turn into? It would be a civil war.
Yes, it would be. And that's my point. Look, I understand Raider fans, let's get better. Totally on board with you on that one. And I think they did with DeSean Jackson. And in about the minute and a half we have left, Mo, let's talk about that, because you wrote a great piece about him up on the website. DeSean Jackson, he's not OBJ. He doesn't have two injured shoulders. But talk about what he's going to be able to do. Is he an adequate replacement for Henry Ruggs?
The coincidental thing is here, a lot of people compared Henry Ruggs to DeSean Jackson when he was coming out of Alabama, because I think even at 34 years old, DeSean Jackson can still do what Henry Ruggs did for that offense. Now, he's not going to be a number one receiver. The Raiders don't need one to have Darren Waller. When the Raiders have operated at their best on offense, Henry Ruggs is getting 3 to 4 catches a game. I think DeSean Jackson can give you that with a 50-yard, 60-yard catch here and there. And that's all you really need out of him. You don't need him to get 7 catches for 125 yards. That's not what Henry Ruggs did. And that's not what they need from DeSean Jackson. You need someone who's going to stretch the field and make it easier for guys like Waller, Hunter Renfro, and the running backs to catch out of the backfield on those short to intermediate routes.
Yeah, no doubt. And then that's the thing. Derek Carr, by the way, who is on pace to come close. Now, Carr haters, I know you're out there and I know you're listening. There is help, okay? There is help for you. But I want you to know that Derek Carr, and I know it's all hypothetical at this point, but through the 9 games, he's on a pace to come within 20 yards of Peyton Manning's all-time season passing yards record. Yes, you heard that right. So can you imagine, Mo, if he hits that mark and the Raiders don't make the playoffs, or the Raiders make the playoffs? I think there's some people out there who would blame him for not making the playoffs, even though he sets an NFL record. And then if he made the playoffs, it wouldn't be because he set an NFL record and he played so well. So we know how that goes, right? You just never win.
Oh, yeah. You'll have the stat guys on one side, and you'll have the same guys saying, well, it's a team game.
Yeah.
It's not all Derek Carr's fault on the other side. That's what you're going to get. That's what you would get.
Yeah, but I think later today, Mo, down at Allegiant tonight on national TV, you'll see Derek Carr back in form. You'll see Derek Carr. I don't know how big of a game DeSean Jackson will be, because he's learning the offense. He's stepping into it now. But they are going to go to him. They're going to use him at the very least, like Ruggs was many times last year. He'll be a decoy. He'll stretch that defense out. You'll see Darren Waller. You'll see Hunter Renfro, even Foster Moreau. I'd love to see them do two tight end sets, which we saw a little bit, but we haven't seen enough of, in my view. So it'll be real interesting. All right, Mo, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Matt Verderam. He is a fan-sided NFL reporter. He's going to break down the Chiefs for us. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Silver and Black Today Game Day. That's right, Game Day, Game Night tonight. Sunday Night Football, the Chiefs and the Raiders at Allegiant Stadium. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this message.
Where the nation rallies every week of the NFL season, it's Silver and Black Today, Game Day.
All right, welcome back to Silver and Black Today, Game Day, here on The Fan in Las Vegas. Mo Moten, Scott Colbranson with you. And now we're going to switch focus. We're going to talk about the Raiders game later tonight against the Kansas City Chiefs. Yes, the hated rival rolls into Las Vegas, into Allegiant Stadium for Sunday Night Football. And joining us to do that is fan-sided NFL writer, national NFL writer, also writes about the Chiefs. Matt Verderam is with us. Matt, welcome to the show. And let's start overall with this Chiefs team. Overall, you know, Raider fans are relishing in the fact that the team is 5-4, that they haven't looked so great on defense. What's been the overall reason why this team is maybe underachieved in the minds of not only Chiefs fans, but observers of the NFL as well?
There's a lot of reasons. They've been changing as the year's gone on. You know, the first month of the year, their defense couldn't stop anybody. The offense was operating at a historic rate outside of turnovers, but the defense was unfortunately also operating at a historic rate. And so, you know, there was a game early in the year, week three, where they played the Eagles. Nobody punted the ball. I mean, it just kind of was that way. And now it's actually flipped. The last month of the year, now granted, the Chiefs played Washington, the Giants, Jordan Love and the Packers, but they've been miles better defensively. A lot of that because the change in personnel. Willie Gay, a second linebacker, has been phenomenal since he's come back from a toe injury to sideline him for the first month. They've put in Nick Bolton much more, their rookie second round linebacker, who's not great against the pass, but is phenomenal against the run. They put in more Juan Thornhill. So defensively, they've actually gotten a lot better. Chris Jones back inside, Frank Clark now looking 100%. But it's been their offense the last month that has been MIA. And a lot of that has been they have been dealing with turnovers. Now, on Sunday when they played the Packers, that was the first time they didn't turn the ball over since week one.
Wow.
But they have had issues, believe it or not, with Mahomes. He's not been bad. He just hasn't been him the last 3 weeks or so. And so I think right now the Chiefs' biggest and maybe their only real major problem is him. So you think at some point he snaps out of it. Is that tonight against the Raiders? We'll see.
Now, speaking about Mahomes, I've read Doug Farrio over at USA Today's Touchdown Wire. He believes Mahomes is just mostly having bad turnover luck, aside from the Packers game, as you mentioned. But some beat reporters saying that he is struggling against too high safety looks and the Chiefs aren't running the ball efficiently and effectively against that coverage. I hear the other take, which is ridiculous to me, that the NFL has finally figured him out. I think there are some times where he's pressing to compensate for a leaky defense before. As you said, the defense has improved recently. But he said in interviews in so many ways that sometimes he does press and he's going to take his shots. Where do you stand on those takes, and what do you think is the biggest issue for Mahomes right now?
So I don't think anybody's figured them out. I mean, I don't think they're going to figure out two Hall of Fame weapons, a Hall of Fame quarterback, and what has actually been a really, really good offensive line. That has been the one in the play story with them from a positive side. Their offensive line has been tremendous. But I think it's a couple things. You know, and he actually said on Wednesday, kind of surprised. He said it so bluntly. He said, look, now the defense is playing as well as it is. I'm not too worried if we have to punt the football, whereas before I felt like if we punt the ball, it's essentially going to be points. I mean, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but I think that was part of it, and I think part of it has been, look, they have not been as effective getting open. You know, we've seen defenses play too high against them for years, and they've shredded too high in the past, but this season, a lot of teams, I know it really started with the Buffalo game. Teams are just taking Travis Kelce out of the game. They're doubling him. They're holding him. I mean, and look, and New England used to do this to Chiefs all the time, by the way. Anytime New England ever played the Chiefs, they did the strategy where they would just hold guys. And I'm not – look, that's not like a sour grapes thing. It's just reality. They would hold them and basically say, look, call it. Go ahead and call it every play. We're going to hold them and hook them and try to tackle them inside the first 5-7 yards. And, you know, he's been beat up a little bit. So that's been part of it. Mecole Hardman's been okay. But he struggles to get open one-on-one at times. They haven't really integrated Josh Gordon. So it's been a lot of things. I know in Kansas City, one of the biggest frustrations is they run the ball effectively when they run it, but they don't stick to it. So it always ends up being, you know, hey, like for an example against the Packers. First drive of the game, they ran the ball 7 times to score a touchdown. The next 2.5 quarters, they ran the ball 5 times. Like, it's mystifying. They just won't do it. They're not patient enough to do it, and it's been something that's really hurt them this year.
And what does Andy Reid say about that, though, Matt, when he's asked, if he is asked, about the fact that they don't stick with that running game, even though it's effective?
You know, the funny thing, he doesn't really get asked about it. You know what he does? It's a lot of like, well, you know, we felt that that was the best thing to do at the time, or that was the look we got. But teams, you know, usually, as you guys know, as I'm sure all of us know, as anybody knows watching the NFL, you're going to see different defenses every week, by and large. You know, if you you're Derek Carr going into a game against the Giants, you're going to get a different defense than you would going against Kansas City. The Chiefs see the same defense every single week. It is just too high. Nobody blitzes. Everybody drops. And they are good. And these teams will just give them, happily give them, 6 yards on the ground, 8 yards underneath. But the Chiefs get impatient. And I think that, and that's not just Mahomes. That's Eric Bieniemy. That's Andy Reid. I'm fascinated with the Raiders in this game because, look, the Raiders blitz less than anybody. They play a ton of cover three with Gus Bradley. They're going to drop. They're going to play zone underneath. The Chiefs have not seen that. Every team that has played the Chiefs essentially played a ton of man underneath. They play too high over the top. I'm very curious to see how this plays out with the Raiders giving them a much different look, albeit a look that the Chargers gave them over the years at Gus Bradley as their coordinator.
Absolutely. So I've seen you railed about this on Twitter, and you briefly mentioned it. You touched on it a little bit about that offensive line, that revamped offensive line. Some people have pointed to it as an issue. I'm not one of them. Collectively, yes, they had a rough day against the Titans. I get that. But overall, yeah. What have you seen from that group? And do you think it's a foregone conclusion that Orlando Brown gets a big extension in next offseason?
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. I think likely. They have to figure out where their money's going to go because they have him and Tyrann Mathieu, who both need to be extended if they're going to keep him there. I think there's a good shot one of them gets tagged, one of them gets the extension, and then they either give Frank Clark a huge pay cut or they cut him. Anthony Hitchens is gone. He's not coming back next year. So they'll free up some money there. They don't need him. They've gained it. Excuse me, Dan Bolton. So, yeah. Look, the offensive line takes drives me nuts because if you cover the league, I really do believe, like, look, you're not going to catch every team, every game, every week. I understand that. But, geez, I mean, if you watch the Chiefs, literally the Titans game was the only game that offensive line has not played well. But the rest of the year, they've been fantastic. I mean, I will tell you, if for anybody who's not familiar with watching Chiefs Rams this year, when they play on Sunday night, watch their first overall, excuse me, their he was there for a second-round pick at Creed Humphrey, their center at Oklahoma, who has been – I've talked to some people in the league and other teams who feel like he could be a first-team All-Pro this year. I mean, he has been just unbelievable. And then the right guard, Trey Smith, they took in the sixth round, who fell because of – he had some blood-clotting issues in Tennessee. He's been as good as Humphrey. So they have these two rookies inside with Joe Tooney, who, of course, they paid a record-setting deal to. The tackles – have been a little less impressive. The interior has been tremendous, but Brown's been good. They've had Niang and Remmer both playing at right tackle this year. Both have been solid, although both are hurt. They might not play. It might be Andrew Wiley. If that happens, that is a very interesting matchup to watch. Max Crosby is having a defensive player of the year type season. Andrew Wiley is mediocre at best as a tackle. He's really supposed to be a guard. I would suspect that the Chiefs will double him constantly if that's the matchup.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating. Again, we're talking to Matt Verderam from FanSided. He covers the NFL, including the Chiefs. And Matt, you talked about Creed Humphrey. You talked about Trey Smith. Of course, the other draft pick that's really shined for the Raiders out of that 21, or excuse me, for the Chiefs out of that 21 class is Nick Bolton. This team, this roster coming together, that defense, and I bring up Bolton there too, because I know we talked about the defense a little earlier, but they start 2021 so dreadfully. Pass rush has been on. They have through nine games, 12 sacks. They trade with Pittsburgh to go get Melvin Ingram. Frank Clark is finally playing better the past few games. Has that defense in your mind turned the corner now?
I think they have. Now, look, they haven't become elite. Nobody would confuse them with that. But I think right now they're playing at a level that would put them between, like, you know, 12 and 16 in the league. They've made a lot of changes. Like, early in the year in their secondary, Treverius Ward missed some time. He's now back. He played very well. One of the big additions has been, the change with third-year corner Rashad Fenton. He has come in, and he's always done a nice job in spot duty the first couple of years. But this year, he took over for Mike Hughes, who was atrocious early in the season. They put Rashad Fenton in. Rashad Fenton, I think the Pro Football folks right now, is the number two rated corner in football. He's been a revelation for them. Lejarius Sneed has really played well in his second year. He came on strong as a rookie, followed that up. So that's been different. Another difference is they were playing Dan Sorensen 100% of the snaps early in the year, which was just a travesty. Just an absolute disaster. They benched him for the most part. He pretty much only plays third down packages, which is still too much, but it's less than it was. Mm-hmm. And they put in Juan Thornhill. Thornhill struggles to tackle in space sometimes, but he's a really rangy, athletic center fielder type safety. And then, as you mentioned, look, Nick Bolton, early in the year, they put him in the rundown to take him off the field. Then Anthony Hitchens got hurt, and Nick Bolton played for him and became the defensive rookie of the month. So they're not taking him off the field any day soon. Willie Gay, like I mentioned earlier, he missed the first month of the year with turf toe. He's been back. He is their one linebacker who can really cover. In fact, I think they're going to see a lot of him on Darren Waller in this game. Obviously, of course, it's a matchup the Raiders will try to exploit. It's a matchup the Chiefs feel athletically gives them the best shot to cover him. So I think, look, Bolton has been excellent. He's good downhill. He's a thumper against the run. He's kind of like a Denzel Perryman type. Whereas Gay is more of a rangy, athletic, put him in coverage. He has two picks over the last 3 weeks. So he's been very good in that regard.
So I'm looking at this with this matchup, Matt, on the inside. The Raiders have some young interior linemen. And as you said, Chris Jones inside, that's going to be an issue. But what's going on with Jerron Reed? He was a high-end playmaker in Seattle. He asked for his release, I believe. Goes to Kansas City, and he's basically not an impact player. Is there a scheme fit problem with him? Like, what's going on there?
It's a great question. I think they're all trying to figure that out. I sampled some execs around the league before the season started. So, who are some under-the-radar guys who are signed or acquired this offseason who you think are going to make an impact? He was universally one of the answers. I know when the Chiefs signed him, they felt like it was a steal. And he has been missing in action. I mean, they have not even seen Jerron. The last couple weeks, with Jones back inside, he started to make an impact. He started to look better. He still has not been what they thought he would be. But there at least are, you know, 3, 4, 5 plays a game. You go, oh, okay, you know, there's a nice little splash by him. Well, I'm not exaggerating. The first 6 games of the year, I didn't see him once. I mean, they were to the point where I actually thought they might just cut him. I mean, but it's been – he's gotten better. I think Jones moving inside has transformed that whole defense line. They tried him outside. It's something they toyed about mentally, you know, for a while behind the scenes. I said, okay, we'll give it a shot. And the first game of the year, he had 2 sacks. So I think it was like, okay, well, he's fine there. Well, it turns out he's not fine there. And it also turns out that without him inside, they couldn't get the push they wanted to get. So now kicking him back in, look, they, you know, Derek Nnadi rotation as well. He's more of a nose tackle type. He's a really good run stuffer. They use him on first and second downs. And all of a sudden, Frank Clark, who was kind of dealing with hamstring injuries and off the field stuff this offseason, he talked about a few weeks ago how maybe he wasn't in the right mental space. Well, the last month of the year has been the best football he's ever played in Kansas City. I mean, he has been constantly a force in this game. And now Melvin Ingram coming in against the Packers, first snap of his career with the Chiefs, he hit Jordan Love, almost forced the fumble. He's going to be important for them. He does not have to be their top pass rusher, but he's got to be a factor. He was against the Packers. We'll see if he can be against the Raiders.
So, Matt, this game, obviously, any time the Chiefs and Raiders play, it's a big game because they don't like each other. It goes back way, way long time ago, early AFL days, all that jazz. But this year, you have a Raiders team with all the turmoil they've had off the field, with losing their coach, all that, yet they sit at 5-4. Then you have the Chiefs sitting there as well, or 5-3, I should say, and the Chiefs sitting at 5-4. It seems to me like this game tonight here in Las Vegas is going to be kind of, you know, it'll set the course for either team, whether or not, I know it's somewhat early in the season, but still, whatever happens in this game, I think can propel a team to really start to make that run for a late season, get things on back on track. Whereas the team that loses, especially depending how they lose, might struggle and start to look on the outside in on the AFC playoff race.
I totally agree. I think it's the biggest game of the year for both teams. Mm-hmm. And I think Kansas City, this has been a game that I know, you know, it's been like, look, if we can take care of business at home here against the Giants and Packers, we go to Vegas Sunday night, there's a game we got to win. And if you're the Raiders, you're looking at this thing going, all right, look, we lost the Giants. We had a rough week, a lot of things going on, obviously more important than football. And I come back, this is a game they have to win. I mean, I think whoever loses, look, could they still make the playoffs? Sure. Could they still win the division? Yeah, absolutely, right? I mean, but this is a game where if Kansas City wins, if you look at the rest of their schedule, it gets a lot easier. I mean, the Chiefs have just played a gauntlet all year long. Every single game, it felt like they've been playing a team that's either really good or like capable of winning the game. It's eased up a little bit recently, like I mentioned, with some of the teams they played. But, you know, after this, they play Dallas, which is tough. Then they go at Arrowhead. Then they go on a bye. Then they come out of that, and it's the Broncos at home, the Raiders at home, tough, but it's at home at least. Then they finish up with, you know, another matchup with Denver. They play Pittsburgh at home. The Bengals, who are suddenly reeling. I mean, it's not a schedule that you look at and say, oh, the Chiefs are probably going to really struggle. If they win this game, they could really start rolling, especially if Mahomes comes out of his funk. On the flip side, if you're the Raiders and you win this game, you get up on the Chiefs a game and a half. Okay, you still have to go to Arrowhead, but now at least you've got that cushion. You know, look, the Chargers, they're hard to figure.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at the Chargers, and every week I look at them and think, well, they could win, or they could lose. I mean, they never, you know, I mean, I looked at that Eagles game and sat there and stared at it for 20 minutes, couldn't figure out what the result was going to be. I look at this game against Minnesota this weekend, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, that game, who knows how it's going to play out. So, you know, and then Denver, give them credit for the Dallas loss. I still think they're the worst team in the division. But it's going to be a fight. And whoever wins this game on Sunday Night Football is going to have a big advantage over the other one as we head down the stretch.
I totally agree with that. But you follow this team day to day. Do you sense a heightened urgency, noticing that they could fall to 5-5 and be last place in the AFC West so close to Thanksgiving, or is there a feeling that, oh, we're going to just turn it on and turn this around and have a good season?
I think the sense of urgency around them changed after they got destroyed by Tennessee. You know, early in the year, it almost felt, and I talked a lot about this on my podcast that I do, Stack in the Box, Smash, and Arrowhead Attic, of course, the Chiefs. And I really railed against them after that Titans game. So it feels like there's no accountability. They just don't have any urgency. There's no, hey, we've got to win this game. We've got to figure this out. I mean, even earlier in the year, you know, they lose on a fumble at the end of the game, the Baltimore game they should have won. Then they play the Chargers at Arrowhead in week 3, and they, you know, Mahomes throws a bunch of picks. They fumble the ball. I mean, if you go back and watch that game, the Chiefs should have won that game by 2 touchdowns. And they lost because they beat themselves the entire afternoon. Then they get walloped by Buffalo. And I thought, okay, that's the game. That's the game. Sunday night football, they get killed by the Bills at home. That's going to get them going. And even that, after the game, they were just kind of like, oh, it's all right. We'll figure it out. And I think that speaks to, look, they have so much experience. They've been to all these huge spots. They've won a Super Bowl. Like, they just always believe, we'll figure it out. But after that Titans game, when they got beat the way they got beat, I think that was a game that they said, okay, you know, we've got to look inward a little bit. You heard more of that in the press conferences. Since then, the defense has really stepped up. The offense has actually struggled quite a bit. But I would be – look, they may lose this game. They may win. We're going to find out. I would be very surprised if the Chiefs don't come out firing this game. I think this is a game where it's the Raiders. It's Raider week. I mean, it's something like football. If they come out and they're dead in this game, then I think they're just broken. I don't think they will be. I think they will come out with a purpose. But is it enough? I don't know. To this point in the year, the Raiders have outplayed the Chiefs. There's no two ways about that. Like, the only reason the Chiefs are favored is because Vegas, the books don't want to take a bath if Mahomes just goes out of his mind in this game. But
right.
The Chiefs, if you did this by the games we've seen this year, the Raiders should be favored in this game. I mean, the Raiders play better, but it's going to be very, very interesting.
Yeah, and having sat in the stands in the press box and watched the game last year in Las Vegas with the Chiefs, I anticipate something similar. I do anticipate that these teams will score against one another if they come out and they're both firing on all cylinders, like you said, Matt. All right, there you go. Matt Verderam from Fansided NFL. He's also covers the Chiefs with the podcast there that you can listen to, which I'm sure no Raider fans will do, but no offense to you, Matt. You know how they feel about Raider fans. Just like no Chiefs fans are going to listen to this show, most likely. But we certainly appreciate the work you do, and we appreciate you spending time with us tonight.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem, guys. Anytime.
All right, there you go. Matt Verderam, Fansided NFL. All right, Mo, great guest, man. Matt's, it's good to know. He knows the Chiefs. He knows the Raiders, too, and I think he's right. I think this game will be huge. Huge tonight at Allegiant Stadium for both these teams. This is where the rubber meets the road. It's a big AFC West game, but both these teams looking to find that right track to get back on to.
Yeah, quick note about Matt. He's also a Knicks fan, so Raiders fans be easy on him.
No.
That's where we have our
Poor
common
guy.
Ground.
Poor
Matt's
guy.
From New York, and he's a Knicks fan, so that's where we meet in the middle. Matt's a great dude. He's just a Chiefs guy, but he's a great dude. But yes.
I'm a fan of one Nick, by the way. Walt Frazier. That? Walt Frazier, Southern Illinois yeah. University. He's a Saluki. Anyway, go ahead, Mo. Sorry. Oh, so Matt was making the point.
No, but Matt had a lot of great points there. He kind of broke down everything from the Chiefs from the negative to the positive. And I thought what stuck out to me is that he said this is the biggest game between these two teams because, as we've even said, you know, if a loss could send either of these two teams into a tailspin, a win could propel either of these two teams into the playoff picture, and you look at them saying, okay, they figure it out, because both teams have had the issues this season, different issues, but both teams have struggled and been up and down. So you figure this game could be a momentum boost, whoever wins it and however they win it. I don't think we're going to see a blowout either way. I think this is going to be a close game because both teams understand the importance of this game and what it means for their playoff future. But I don't think we're going to see a sloppy Chiefs team against the Raiders, and I don't think we're going to see a lethargic Raiders team against the Chiefs, so it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out.
I agree 100%. They're going to both be fired up tonight at Allegiant Stadium. The city's already electric. Everybody's going to be excited for this one in the teams. I don't anticipate Patrick Mahomes coming out and looking flat. I think he's going to look on fire. I think Derek Carr, after last week and what happened in New York, he's going to be focused, and what we've heard from him out of the press conferences this week indicates that. Well, we got to say goodbye to Mo today. Mo's got to go cover the rest of the league. So Mo, thanks for being with us and for asking the great questions of Matt. We will talk to you on the show next week.
Again, hopefully it's after a win because I can't stomach another loss, another Raiders loss. Because if the losses start to pile up, you know how social media gets.
Oh, it yes. gets nuts. It's already nuts, and then it gets just even crazier. It's like the apocalypse with zombies running around. There you go. Mo Moton, make sure you follow him on Twitter at MOEMOTON. He is a national writer over at Bleacher Report, also contributes up on VegasSportsToday.com as well. We're going to step aside here on Silver and Black Today Game Day. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show talking about the game later down at Allegiant Stadium and my thoughts on that. Where will it go? How will it end up? We're going to give you our thoughts here on Silver and Black Today Game Day. Don't go anywhere, Raider Nation.
Raider Nation is fired up. It's Silver and Black Today Game Day.
Welcome back. Home stretch here on Silver and Black Today Game Day, only on The Fan in Las Vegas. Hope you're listening to us live on the Odyssey app. If you don't have it, make sure you get it on your smartphone. You can listen to us anywhere. I'm getting emails and texts from our listeners all over the country as usual. So make sure you do that. I appreciate you guys being with us here. And again, thank you to Matt Verderam from Fansided, the national NFL reporter who joined us in the last segment, as well as my co-host Mo Moton, who's on to covering the day's games with the NFL. And he had to leave us after the second segment. But as always, Mo's here on the show every week with me as well. So now we get down to the nitty gritty, and that is the Raiders and the Chiefs later tonight down at Allegiant Stadium. Of course, the City Electric Sunday Night Football as national coverage. The national game of the week comes to Las Vegas yet again. Of course, you've had the Monday Night Footballs here this year, and then now Sunday Night Football, Al Michaels and the gang in town, Chris Collinsworth to do the Raider game. And I'll tell you what, we mentioned it with the guests, with Matt Verderam, and also Mo and I talked about it earlier in the show, and that this game is huge. I mean, it's always huge. I know what you're saying, Raider Nation. It's the Chiefs. You hate the Kansas City Chiefs. We go back to the Phil Villapiano prayer, if you remember from our Silver and Black Today show on our sister station 1140 back a couple years ago. We had Phil on, and he said he wanted to teach the kids of Las Vegas the Raider prayer, and that was, "Our Father who art in heaven, I hate the Kansas City Chiefs." So we all know how Raider fans feel about the entire AFC West. But that Chiefs and Broncos, it's, you know, it's different. Yeah, you hate the Chargers too, but the Chiefs and the Broncos, especially this Chiefs team recently having won a Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes, all that stuff, okay, is big. Of course, the Raiders last year, they go to Arrowhead and they win. Derek Carr had been criticized, not able to win at Arrowhead Stadium. He does it. They have a great game. Then they come back to Las Vegas in the empty Allegiant Stadium, thank you, COVID-19. And they lose that heartbreaker to the Chiefs last year. Patrick Mahomes does what he does. Now, he hasn't done that this year. He hasn't been the same quarterback, but I think that's primarily just stuff hasn't been open. Teams have played him effectively. That's what the Raiders are going to have to do. The Raiders are going to have to rush four, as they've done all year successfully, and create that. Because the moment that you blitz, And we know Gus Bradley doesn't do that, but the moment you blitz, you're going to give Patrick Mahomes holes in your defense, and guess what he's going to do? He's going to take advantage of those, and he's going to score on you. He's going to find Tyreek Hill. He's going to find Mecole Hardman. He's going to find one Mr. Travis Kelce. So the Raiders are going to have to keep them contained. The Raiders are going to have to use that defense how they have been, and Gus Bradley stick with his normal game plan. I think Yannick Ngakoue has another big game. I think Max Crosby is going to be fired up for this puppy. I think Max Crosby, Yannick Ngakoue are going to have a hell of a tag team with Patrick Mahomes tonight down at Allegiant. So that's going to be a big one. And I just think, too, if you look at this game, Raiders 5-3, Chiefs 5-4. Supremacy in the AFC West. Tiebreakers in the AFC West, tiebreakers in the AFC. The Raiders have already done very well with that, winning in the conference. Of course, they're 0-2 in the division thus far. But at the same time, they're from an AFC perspective, they're great. So from a playoff perspective, that's the other thing. The Raiders, with all that they've been through off the field, Coach, Ruggs, Arnett, Cut, all of these things happening. What they need is they need that big win at home. If you're the Raiders at 5-3 and you have the Chiefs in your house on national TV, off all the drama you've had around your locker room, the drama you've had around your front office, the drama you've had around your owner, what do? You go out and you win the football game. That's what you do. So I think the Raiders are going to be fired up for this one. I think the Raiders win this game. I'm not saying that because I'm doing a Raiders show. You guys know. I'll pick the team that I think is really going to win. But I do think that it's a must win. I know must win and all that, and you can say there's no such thing as a must win. But I'm telling you, this team needs this win. This team should win this game. Because right now and so far in 2021, they are better than the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't care about Patrick Mahomes. I don't care about Travis Kelce. You got Derek Carr on a pace to break Peyton Manning's record or at least come close to it from a passing yards perspective. Okay? You have Darren Waller. He can match Travis Kelce. You have the defense better. Yeah, they're not a top 10 or elite defense. They're better than the Chiefs' defense. Come on now. And what the odds makers say, I get it, but I'm just telling you, the Raiders will win this game. It's going to be close. It might not seem like they're going to win at times, but I really believe that this team, emotionally, after the last 2 weeks, they're ready now to turn it over. Just like they were after the Gruden incident, and they were able to come back out, win that game in Denver for Rich Bisaccia in his first game. I really think you're going to see Derek Carr go back to what he was doing a couple weeks ago. I really believe you'll see Josh Jacobs run the ball effectively. I really believe Hunter Renfrow will get involved with this game. I really believe Kenyon Drake will do what he's been doing, and I told you he would. That's right, I told you so. Okay? Not only that, but I think DeSean Jackson will play a factor in the game. Yes, it's his first game. Yes, he's still learning the playbook. Yes, he's 34 years old, but he's fast. He stretches the field. Derek Carr needs that. Then he can hit all of the other players I mentioned. So DeSean Jackson matters. He was the right guy, the right fit for this team, as Mo said earlier. Okay? So that's going to happen. On defense, I told you about the two guys up front. We're going to have to see that defensive backfield play well. Tyreek Hill, he'll get his. Travis Kelce, he'll get his most likely. But if the Raiders can contain them enough, and if the Raiders' offense is clicking on all cylinders like it has earlier in the year, they will win this game. And I'm taking them. I'm taking them by a field goal. I'm not saying it's going to be a blowout or anything, but I think the Raiders win this game by 3 points later tonight as you're all celebrating on the Las Vegas Strip or walking back from the game. It's going to be fun. All right, well, listen, for my co-host Mo Moten, for our guest Matt Verderam from NFL's Fansided, I wanted to thank all of you for being with us here on Silver and Black Today Game Day. Make sure you follow us at SNB Tonight on Twitter. I am at LV Gully. And enjoy the game tonight, Raider Nation. You deserve it. We will be back here next Sunday at 9 a.m., 4 a.m. on the East Coast for the early birds talking Raiders football. Take care, Raider Nation. Appreciate you, and we'll talk to you next week.